It's a pleasure to be joined by Ayman Hussein, who's the Director of Customer Success Intelligent Cloud at Microsoft. Hi, Ayman. How are you doing today?
I am doing well. Great to be here with you, Jerry. Thank you for the time, and I appreciate the opportunity to have a good conversation with you.
Well, you know, we've sort of traveled around different organizations and different industries and so on, and heard lots of really great stories. And of course, from your perspective, you know, Microsoft, you're definitely one of the organizations, if not one of the leading organizations, that is making a lot of this happen. So it's really great to have a chance to talk to you. So tell us a little about, if you don't mind yourself, how you got to be at this role in Microsoft, being a great organization, and how you came to be doing what you do.
Excellent. Hey, thanks for the opportunity, Jerry. So if you look at the way I grew in my career, the common theme is strategy, consulting, and management consulting. That's my DNA. That's what I grew up with. And one of the core tenets of my success is focusing on the customer or client's outcomes. What do they need to transform digitally or innovate using technology? Now, in the world of Microsoft, if you're familiar with Microsoft and followed over the 45 years of its existence, it has been traditionally a product company. And one of the challenges as we innovated into the cloud era is to make sure that our customers were looking at the product, not from the perspective of the brand that was associated with it, but on how it solves an outcome for them and makes them more relevant in their business or industry. So the way I landed at Microsoft is to build this customer success organization for the segment that I work in, and to help customer achieve success, to do more, which is a core tenet of our mission statement, by using technology. Now, all things cannot be solved using technology, but understanding what that outcome needs to be is where I succeed. My team and I focus on outcomes an industry needs. For example, in healthcare, maybe your motivation is to save more lives. Now, how can technology help that? I need to understand and stitch it together. If you're in energy, how to generate more energy, more sustainable energy, perhaps. If you're in manufacturing, how to do more efficient manufacturing and supply chain management. All of these have a component of a technology, and today technology has gravitated into the cloud. And so at Microsoft today, I take that cloud platform that's available and solve your challenges and outcomes that we need to do more of. And that's what I do today.
I think you've answered quite a bit of my next question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So what is customer success to you, and why does it matter?
That's a great conversation, right? Customer success to me is outcome success. What did you want to do, and did you successfully do it, regardless of the product and the solution that went with it? And for me, to focus on the outcome guarantees your personal success or your industry success or your job success or your company success. And that personalization, that empathy connection is really what it looks for me. I want to make sure that you, with or without Microsoft, are achieving the success that you have set your goals to. Either if you're a publicly traded organization, you may have some profitability goals. Have you reached that? If you're a nonprofit and you have some social goals, have you met those? And that's what customer success means to me. And it is important for the world today because we have seen in the last 18 months with the coronavirus COVID pandemic, as success has many different flavors. I'm like, you have a boat that goes sideways in the Suez Canal and it locks up supply chain, right? So your success could have been interrupted because of a supply chain problem while you may be in healthcare. So if you could not get your supplies for healthcare because of a supply chain problem, you are impacted. And so when I look at how I'm making a difference, is if I focus on your outcome goals, and it could be micro, it could be macro, and then building on top of that to use technology. At the end of the day, I do work for Microsoft, so I'm using Microsoft technologies, but had I not, any brand of technology that solves that outcome for you is where I would focus.
And it leads in, I think, well to my next question, which is, given what we've seen over the last 15, 16 months, and we've heard today and in many other presentations about the digital transformation that companies have had to go through, perhaps far quicker than they planned to. So what is digital transformation to you? What does that really mean?
That's another great question. So in my world, digital transformation means democratizing data, right? Every company, organization, any industry nonprofit or non, has data. That is the currency. A lot of people say data is the new currency. It is true. But if I can't give you access to data, it's worthless. And what to maybe a handful of people. So when I say digital transformation, what I want to do is take this data, this payload of data, and democratize it so that you as a consumer or a user of it from a corporate perspective have access to it. Now, there's a lot of layers that go with it. We have to make sure it's secure. Maybe we have permission-based access, maybe role-based access. So those are the governance that goes into accessing that data so that not everybody gets to see all the data. And so there's some policing there, but I need to make sure that you have access to the data. Because what happens is when you have access to the data and some tools that go with it, you can now have insights and you can have analysis that you may not have been accessible in the past. And that gives me more productivity out of you. So when I look at digital transformation, I say, where is your data? Let's bring it to a place where everybody can have access to it, from maybe the custodian of a building to the C-level officer in the building, because that's where you see the most transformation happening. In the world of the analog to digital, well, sometimes data is still in legacy analog format. So let's transform that by getting into a digital format, maybe storing it in a place where it's accessible, and then giving the ways to access it so that it's meaningful. And that's what digital transformation is to me.
And I think you mentioned, you used the word productivity, which is one of the next things I was thinking about. And as you mentioned earlier, it's really about what it means to that organization. And I think you put it really well, the ability to understand what it means to each organization. So as you eloquently put, the problem they had in the Suez Canal and all of the fallout from that was tremendous. And as you say, people that had no bearing on what happened in Suez Canal were faced with it. So productivity and digital transformation is really critical. And you've explained that, started to explain that. Can you perhaps just tell us a little bit more about what that means in terms of an organization and the productivity side of things?
Perfect. Yes. So to think about, let's use data as the common denominator here, right? So if I gave you access to all the data, and maybe you're a business analyst and you're sitting there crunching AP numbers, accounts receivable, accounts payable, but because you've had data, and if you have invoice data, let's use the example of a supply chain, like you know when dates, things are shipped, when they're received, when they're paid. If I gave you access to the data, now you can do some scenario plans, right? Maybe you have vendor management that goes with it, right? So you look at it and look at the invoices and say, hey, look, these people pay on time, these people don't pay on time. So next time we do a bid, let's go figure out how we focus on that group of people. But if you were in business analysis and not accounting and you didn't have access to the data, you're probably not looking at it that deep. So send the, going back to the scenario place of the Suez Canal and the boat going sideways, if you were in supply chain logistics and ordering manufactured goods from, say, China or some other part of the world that has to go transit through that, what if I gave you the access to the data for your productivity? Say, hey, let's increase that delay in shipment time. Maybe you can do a scenario, like a simulation in your analysis and what if scenario dashboards, and you increase the supply chain time, delayed shipping. What does it look like for your profitability? Because all of these are analysis based on data. So if I want to make you more productive, for you to make a better decision, maybe, or you order the supplies ahead of time because you're doing a hurricane season. And here in the U.S. where I live in a part of the country where there's hurricane is impactful. So what if power goes out and I have an interruption in production? What if I plan for these and have the scenarios baked on that? So look at what happened with coronavirus and COVID. Like people ran out of toilet paper. I'm like, not the reason of why they ran out of toilet paper. Supply chain could not keep up. They did not have any manufacturing capability. But what if I planned for that? What if I did a scenario plan saying, hey, this supplier is going to go out of business because they're going to shut down? What does it look like? And I use the recent challenge with India. India had this massive pandemic uptick that happened recently. A lot of the call centers for a lot of these companies are based in India. That, you know, it's a great offshore outsource organization. They have great talent, but they couldn't show up for work. So they couldn't answer the phone. So your support organization suffered. Did you plan for that? Did you have an alternate place to go take your support? Maybe that's digital transformation there. Maybe you should have digital tools that allows you to move remote work from one area to another. Mm-hmm. So that access to data and those scenario planning is increasing productivity. And if you didn't plan for it, in this today's volatile world of changes and surprises, you will be in a place where you either win or don't. It's like the classical disaster scenario that we had in the 90s, where we'd say go plan for disaster recovery, because if your data center got flooded or burned down, do you have your data backed up on tape? Well, take that on steroids, and that's what we're planning for today with the digital transformation productivity gains.
Well, I think you've articulated it really well across a range of possibilities, because it's not just, as you mentioned, you know, one person in the organization may be looking at it for one thing, somebody else in another. And as you say, giving them access, giving them that unfettered access to that information is incredibly valuable. And I guess in this world today, in we look at what is effectively an internet first, mobile first, and cloud first era. So how relevant is customer success and digital transformation when we think of it in those terms?
It is very relevant, right? Think of the digital divide that we live in today, right? In the Western parts of the world where digital divide is less relevant, but there's parts of the world where we have skipped digital technology. For example, in South Asian countries where infrastructure is poor, they don't have digital landlines. Why? They skipped it. They went to wireless technology right away. They went to 3G, 4G, 5G coming out, right? So when you think of that mobile first, cloud first mindset, if you don't have accessibility to the data, or the apps, or the solutions, or the banking, or the finance, and none of that is relevant anymore if you forget to plan for that capability first. So it is hugely important. And then from the design perspective, it's even more relevant. You have people in the world that may not have the level of skilling and learning that lets them use mobile apps in a way that may not be designed for a group of people that may not have literacy at the level that you need them. So you have now design user experience. You have payloads that will take a lot of memory and battery on a mobile phone or a smartphone. You don't want to have it so that it's always consuming battery. You need to design for all these aspects that even 5 years ago, you didn't really think about the user experience, the access to data, access to technology, offline access, capability to be immediate, real time, near time. And when you think of the technology back end of it, like if you're a technologist and an architect, you have to design with all that in mind and not just the front end of it. You have to design with access to data. Well, if you want to make it accessible anywhere, you have to make sure data is also everywhere. Well, you can't do that unless you have a good global infrastructure for computing that shares the data and manages it securely. And so those are a lot of things that come into play when you think about the fact that we live in a cloud-first, mobile-first, internet-first world.
And I guess, as you pointed out, the ability to get that data, irrespective of what your landscape, whatever your technology landscape is, that to me is real success when you're able to do that. So that's really a great point. And when you think about how a customer success strategy helps an organization differentiate in either in their industry or in their market, how do you see it working when somebody says, yes, this is, you know, we're really focused on a customer success strategy because we really do want to be different?
It's a great point, right? So customer success strategy, and a lot of people throw that word around just for a Me Too aspect of it. They say we have customer success, we're doing that. But really what I look at customer success is outcome success, right? You can spend millions of dollars building customer success strategy, but did you go back and follow to the original decider or sponsor to figure out if they got what they needed out of it? And if you think of large organizations, large corporations, board level decisions are made on ERP solutions and platforms. Somebody will say, hey, we're gonna go down the SAP route. We're gonna spend millions of dollars doing that. It comes out of a board, comes out of a very senior group of people and advisors, right? Do you go follow back to them? Because some of these people are publicly announcing this on a 10K report. If you're in the US and you're publicly traded, you have analysts that will jump on quarterly calls and question leaders and say, hey, you are in the business of, growing trees, but you have data centers that is, not sustainable. What are you doing about it? When your leader gets challenged by those conversations, customer success means nothing because their outcome that they may have signed up for is drifted quite a bit. So when I look at what does it mean and how does it work, you always have to go back to the origination point. Now, in the world where you're enterprise-centric and you're selling and you have structures, sometimes customer success comes in the middle of the conversation. Somebody already sold it in the pipe dream, right? And delivery is on the tail end of it with consulting. And you're in the middle. You're just like, well, I need to go left. I need to go right because I need to bring it back to the beginning. So an organization that succeeds with a customer success organization has to always start in the beginning. It's like, I would ask you, Jerry, like if you had an outcome, I would say, why do you want that? What prompted you? And if you give me an answer like, oh, because my boss told me to, I would challenge them, like, just because your boss told me doesn't mean that it's an outcome you want. Let's figure out what it is. Let's go talk to your boss, perhaps. You always have to come back to the top, because that outcome success really comes out of that conversation. And some of that might be a me too. So if you want a me too, I'll get you me too. I'll make you look like cool, like the rest. That's your outcome. I'm not really focused on anything else. But if you really want productivity gain, revenue gain, market share gain, I need to understand that so I can build accordingly. And it's not a one-person show. It's multiple people will be organized in that context to help you succeed.
And I guess, very importantly, if you get this wrong, and then to your point, if you're doing digital transformation because the boss, the CEO, the MD, whatever it is, says, oh, we've got to go digital, then potentially you have this digital divide between the organization and their customers. The organization's view of it, the customers, what they're expecting, you know, what they've got from other, they go, wow, we've got this great digital experience at this company. And then somebody says, wow, we're gonna go digital. And it's totally different.
So yes, you hit it right on the nose there. You have to understand an outcome of any level has to have profit or otherwise. You
yes.
always have a dotted line that means something for somebody. For example, at Microsoft, we have a simple mission statement, help you achieve more. We didn't say achieve more with Windows. We didn't say achieve more with Azure. We said achieve more. Mm. Whatever it is you want to achieve more, I can find a way to make that a quantified goal. That's the customer success target. That's the North Star. And I can work around that. And if it's technology, I'll throw technology at it. If it's people, I'll throw people at it. And if it's transformation and innovation, we'll do that as well. And so that is the real paramount importance, because there's always a cost and you always want that ROI, return on investment, for that digital transformation. Digital transformation just for doing it really does not help. I'm like, we live in a digital transformed world. I'm gonna look at all the data, all the pictures you may have on your smartphone that you've uploaded to someone called storage. You have millions and millions of pictures. All these Instagrammers, all these influencers have millions of pictures. Imagine the payload that is there that you can do something with it, image recognition, maybe, you know, artificial intelligence training. But just having data alone in a digital format is not good enough. You have to have an outcome that goes with it.
Indeed. Well, when you reminded me moments ago that it's 45 years since Microsoft started, I thought, yes, it is indeed. And I will have to admit, I remember that. So I don't know if I foresaw what the future held at that point for Microsoft and computing in general, perhaps. But if you can, and what you can share with us, future plans from your perspective and your role and, you know, the bigger role for Microsoft.
Absolutely. So if we just took Microsoft away from a conversation of what I expect the future to be, and there's a paramount shift coming. A lot of people talk about it in the way of science fiction, but I think quantum technology, quantum computing is going to define the next 10 years. I mean, it's very close. Now, quantum computer is not this magical computer that exists. Quantum computer still requires classical computing to augment it. It's still the access point is a classical computer. But quantum technology is going to radically shift everything from the crypto locks that we have, from the cryptography that we have. Quantum computing will solve that in seconds. So think of all the cryptography that we have today, the way you lock up your bank account, the way you certify your documents, the way you encrypt files. All of that is going to be in a world of hurt if you don't get ready for it. So when I look at my customers, we have to plan for that eventuality. Even though the technology is not there, and even though quantum computing has not been commercialized, we have to plan for it. So plan for that prospectively. And so what Microsoft is doing is exactly that, planning for that eventual change where classical computer is not as important as technology is, but classical computer will still exist. You still have productivity, you still have email, you'll still have teams like collaboration software, but that the quantum race is really paramount. And that's where I think the entire world is heading to and going to. And it is a precursor to a lot of transformation, because when you have quantum compute, all the data is easily crunched and analyzed, so you would want more data. So you're going to start putting more stuff in there because you now have better weather prediction, you know, better stock market prediction, whatever else you want to go with that.
Well, I'm also guessing we won't have to wait another 45 years to see that, which is good news for me, because that means I might stay around to see it. But
I personally predict in 5 years, quantum computing will be commercialized by somebody, and in 10 years, it'll be mainstream for us.
Well, I look forward to seeing if your prediction comes true. Eamon, it's been a great conversation, fascinating stuff. Thank you for sharing so much in such a short period of time. And
Thank you, Jerry, and thanks for the event coordinators for giving me the opportunity. It's been a great time and great sharing with you some ideas and thoughts.
Delighted to have you. Thanks again.